Welcome to episode 3 of A Flower Pot Pen. In another little mess up, I've come in to record this episode and left behind, or somewhere, the first pages of my notes. If you know me on a personal level, you'd know that's pretty typical. But being the resilient person I am, I'm just going to wing it until I get to the bit I've got in front of me. So, on with the show. It looks like I was going to try talking about some of the weeds I've been getting out of my garden, as I'll be talking a bit about only one of my books. I think I was going to talk about the effects of the hot weather combined with the wet weather we've been having here in the western districts of Victoria and its effect on weed growth. By that I mean hot, humid weather plus high rainfall equals weed and grass growth. Although with the lightning that goes along with it sometimes, there are grass fires as well, which we've experienced this time around too. Some of the most exuberant weeds growing at the moment are common thistles, summer grasses like kikuyu, mallow starting to spring up, dandelions and cat's ears are going off. They're all over the place. I don't like to use chemical sprays except as a last resort, so my preferred method is complete removal of the weed, roots and all. Now, you may just want to compost these, except I wouldn't compost kikuyu as it'll just keep growing. Or you can keep treating it as foraging for food. Thistles, dandelion, cat's ear can all be eaten. This information is widely available at the moment and much more commonly known. In fact, it's quite fashionable these days. But you can find it in my book, Food for Survivors of the Zombie Apocalypse, An Introduction to Edible Weeds. This short book, it's short because it's only an introduction, has some useful advice set against the backdrop of the zombie apocalypse. I first thought of the book when I was thinking about edible weeds and I thought to myself, you'd have to be desperate to eat this. How desperate? Zombie apocalypse desperate. I'll take the time here to mention the person who did the illustrations in the book, my young friend Shan Primer. She's a very, very clever young artist. You can find her gorgeous artwork on her website, shanprimroseart.com. Or find her on Instagram under Shan Primrose Art as well. Anyway, Food for Survivors of the Zombie Apocalypse, An Introduction to Edible Weeds, is available on both Amazon and Google Play as an ebook, or through my Facebook page, Frances Bryant, Writer. Now, moving on to environmental news this week. The Australian Federal Government announced they'll be giving more money to help to protect the Great Barrier Reef in Queensland. If you remember, the United Nations body UNESCO declared it to be in danger, in quotation marks. So they've declared it to be in danger last year and they're due to report on the health of the reef next month. The money that the government has set aside for the Great Barrier Reef will be spent on things like improving the water quality, management and research, and tourism things. Water quality can be improved in a number of ways, like reducing nutrient and pesticide runoff and controlling land erosion. It's going to take a fair bit of collaboration between farmers, fishermen and tourism operators, and it would have to include the traditional landowners. Let's just hope everyone can work together, protect this national treasure. I've never had the opportunity to visit this special place, but I'm hoping it lasts long enough for me to get there before I die. Well, hopefully that's a long way off. Now, in other things that I've been reading about, I noticed a story in The Guardian. The headline was, "Small gardens as vital as big ones for conserving bees," study says. The article in question is written by Mabel Banfield, Nwachi, and I hope I've pronounced that right, and dated the 19th of January 2022. The article is about a study which was published in the Journal of Applied Ecology that found the size of a garden had, in quote marks, little relationship to the amount of nectar produced. I think we're all aware of how important bees are to not only our gardens. Oh, well, that gave me a fly. I don't think that's meant to be there. I'm going to have to fix that at some point. Okay. Right. Once my heart has settled down. Okay. I think we're all aware of how important bees are to not only our gardens, but to agriculture and the world as a whole. So this is very good news. Researchers at the University of Bristol measured the nectar supply of 59 gardens each month from March to October. We're remembering here that the Northern Hemisphere seasons are upside down to ours. And they measured differences in how much... Hang on a sec, I've lost the page, in how much food gardens produced for pollinators. So I'll just go back over that there. They measured 59 gardens each month from March to October, and they measured the differences in how much food gardens produced for pollinators and when the peaks of production were. The plants identified as producing the most nectar were shrubs. That's due to the density of flowers. Another high producer was the daisy. It doesn't say which particular daisy they were talking about. I'm assuming they meant something similar either to, you know, the ubiquitous marguerite daisy or even Bellis perennis, the little daisy that decorates our lawn so prettily. The reason for this was given as being the shape of the daisy flower makes it an extremely easy plant for a bee to access. Well, that's a bit of good news now that makes me feel like I'm contributing to something by having a garden. Right. Now, on to botany bits. We've all heard that talking to your plants will help them grow. I do it. I'm sure many of you do it too. But what if plants are trying to talk back? There's plenty of evidence plants talk to each other. I'm using the word talk pretty loosely. Perhaps communicate is a better word. It's not likely we'll ever get to have a chat to the philodendron you've had on your sideboard forever. I mean, it's fine to talk to it, but I'd be worried if it talked back to you. Anyway, an interesting article crossed my Facebook newsfeed the other day on BBC Future, an article by Chris Baranovic. And that is spelt Baranivk, dated the 1st of September 2021, is titled The People Who Believe Plants Can Talk. He writes about a Finnish artist and associate professor at Aalto University in Finland. She had a plant that sounded like it was clicking when she attached a contact microphone to its roof. It seemed to click when she was alone, but stopped when people came in, only to start up again when they left. She kept the microphones on for about 2.5 years. She admitted, though, the sounds could also have come from microorganisms in the soil or even something else. She got the idea from a study by Monica Gagliano at the University of Western Australia. She had read about this. She has published over a decade a series of papers suggesting plants have the ability to communicate, learn, and remember. Vegans take note, I guess. A paper she published in 2012 towards understanding plant bioacoustics. I found it on a website, sciencedirect.com, if you want to look into it further. She and her co-authors reported those clicking sounds from plant roots. She and others have claimed they've heard plants use words, but I suspect that will need much more investigation. I'd be a little worried myself. I'm not sure I want my plants talking back to me, but that's just me. Anyway, the list of ways that plants can communicate with each other is quite extensive if you want to look into it further. This article has a few links to follow. Well, that's what's interested me this week. I'll continue talking to my plants. Can't hurt, can it? I'll let you know if any of them talk back. Well, that's come to the end of this podcast. Next time, I'll be talking about my research plans for my next book. I think I mentioned that in the very first episode. It will be leading on to some interviews in the near future. Thanks to the Commercial Hotel in Toulang for the use of the recording space and equipment, Jim Williams for his help and that cute intro music. This podcast was recorded at Toulang on land traditionally owned by the Kirrawurrung and Gundjimara people. Till next time. Just as a footnote, I'd just like to say the paper mentioned in the podcast previous towards understanding plant bioacoustics was co-authored by Monica Gagliano and co-authors, just in case you weren't clear on that. Bye.